Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, Rockefeller, we invite you to something epic, you know? Where we hustle out of a sense of hopelessness, sort of a desperation. Through that desperation, we come addicted, sort of like the fiends we accustomed to serving. Where we feel we have nothing to lose.
Everything
so we
gain.
Offer you, well, we offer our lives.
Right.
What do you bring to the table? Well, I'm watching every nigga watching me closely. My shit is butter for the bread, they wanna toast me. I keep my head, both of them where they supposed to be. Hoes to get you sidetracked and clap from close feet. I don't sleep, I'm tired, I feel wired like codeine. These days the rubber gotta admire me. From four fiends away, my pain, which shit was quick to see. From selling cane to winning the pride to a fricassee. Can't lie, at the time it never bothered me. At the bar, getting my dog on properly. My squad and me, lack of respect for authority. Laughing hard, happy to be escaping poverty. However brief, I know this game got valleys and peaks.
Welcome to Chilling with Cheese, everybody. I'm your host, Cheese Gardner. We got a great show tonight. I'm really looking forward to this show. We're going to add a little twist tonight. I've been following this young lady on Twitter for quite some time now. She has a great sense of humor. She's in public relations and boxing. She also has a great blog, EmilyBoxing.com. And I read one of her articles recently about the refugee crisis, of course, in Syria. And she had an interesting article where she went and talked to a gentleman by the name of Jani Ding and out in Arizona where she lives at. And he offered a great perspective on the Syrian crisis through the eyes of, you know, a refugee, former refugee himself. He's one of the lost boys of Sudan. So I thought it'd be an interesting show. I got a lot of people talking about that they really wanted to check the show out and just get her thoughts on how it was for Jani coming to the U.S. From the Sudan. Of course, they went through that crisis themselves. Of course, it's very similar to what's going on in Syria, and I'm not here to bash either way. I mean, we got some people who are for, you know, having refugees come in, some that are not, and I'm not here to bash anyone. Just get different perspective and get different opinions on the subject. So, yeah, we got a great show, and she'll be calling in about 7:10 Eastern time, which will be about another 6 or 7 minutes. But also later on in the show, we'll, of course, we're going to talk boxing and what's the big fight over the weekend. Klitschko, Vladimir Klitschko losing to Tyson Fury, losing his belt after 11 years, which it was one of the most boring fights I've ever seen in my life. I'm going to be very honest with you. Klitschko, he looked to be a fighter who is shot at this point. He didn't seem like he had anything left, and I don't know what's next. Of course, his contract states that he will get a rematch, so I don't know what's going on with that. But we'll talk that much more, and of course, we'll have people calling in. So once Emily gets on, if you guys want to chime in, I'm going to, of course, open up the show with her in the beginning of the show. But, yeah, we'll talk about that and talk about any. This show is an open show tonight. So, ladies, if you're there, you want to talk about something. Fellas, talk about anything. The show is wide open tonight. We're not just going to talk exclusively about boxing. So, it's good we have her on the show, and she'll bring an interesting perspective. And if you ever get a chance, please check out her blog, EmilyBoxing.com. Great sense of humor, and looking forward to having her. Should be a great show. So, of course, another big topic will be Canelo, of course, and his win over Cotto, and who will he have next? And, of course, Pascal and his fight, John Pascal, going against Crusher, Kovalev, and so too. So that'll be a good topic to lean in on. But yeah, nevertheless, we have a lot of guys who emailed and texted me. They may call in and talk about Errol Spence, who I think will be a pound-for-pound top fighter in the next year or two. He's a really talented young man, so we look forward to that. But in the meantime, you want to call in, 718-305-6496, 305-6496. And, yeah, of course, I'm here live in Baltimore. It's a rainy night, so the next 45 minutes we'll have some fun. And, again, we'll leave the wide open after we speak to Emily. So, yeah, another big thing in the news, of course, Kobe Bryant writing a wonderful piece in the Players Tribune where he will be retiring at the end of the year. And, of course, me being a Laker fan, I'm happy for him because he's given all he could give to the game. And, of course, you know, you get to that point where your body won't allow you to do what you want to do anymore. You gracefully bow out, which is what he's doing. And I commend him on a great career, man. He was fantastic, one of the best of all time. And later on in the show, we can debate that. I know we got some Laker fans out there and some Laker haters, too. So feel free to call in if you got anything to say, good or bad, about Kobe. Yeah, it should be a great sight. Of course, we also got Amon Gonzalez. Of course, he ends the year as the pound-for-pound best in the world after, you know, Floyd Mayweather retired in September. So we'll talk about that. Now, yeah, whatever you guys want to talk about, Vasyl Lomachenko and his rise to top 10 status this year. Manny Pacquiao, of course, making his last fight in April, then he will retire. And there's been speculation, whether it be Amir Khan or Terrence Crawford or Timothy Bradley, who knows, but we'll get into that too. But again, if you'd like to call in at once Emily gets on, it's 718-305-6496. 718-305-6496. I've gotten a lot of good and bad comments about my top 10 pound for pound. And if you get a chance, go on chillandcheese.com and you can check it out. We're going to talk about that as well later on. But yeah, that'll be another topic we can get involved with. But I'm really excited about having Emily on the show. And yeah, is that Tone?
Yeah.
What's good, man? This is Tone from out of Las Vegas. How you doing, brother?
Oh, cool, man. You know, since this come to, you know what I'm saying, show my respect, man. You know what I'm saying? Say what up to you, bro, man, and all that good stuff, man.
I appreciate it. Hey, man, you got time to stay on the line. We got Emily calling in a minute, and we're going to do a few different topics tonight. You got a few minutes on your hand?
So what? Can you say that again, bro?
Yeah, I have Emily Pandalakis from EmilyBoxing.com. She's coming on, but we're going to talk a few different subjects tonight. If you got time, you're welcome to stay on, man. That's, you know.
Okay, cool, man. Because what I'll probably do is, like, check back in, you know what I'm saying, and this and that, though. But, you know what I'm saying, shout out to you, man, for, you know what I'm saying, for keeping the boxing thing going, you know what I'm saying, keeping people updated. You know what I'm saying? And, you know what I'm saying? It's been a good year so far. You know what I'm saying? And I'm just proud of what you're doing, man, for real.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it, man. No doubt, man.
So, and what's up, man? What's good?
I'm really excited about this show because I don't know if you ever – I think you probably know who Emily is now. I follow her on Twitter, and she has a great sense of humor and – of course, she has a blog as well, and she's going to be talking about the Lost Boys of Sudan, one of the gentlemen who was a refugee. And he offered her his perspective on the Syrian crisis going on right now. Just to add a little twist, because this is a wide-open show tonight. And, of course, she's in public relations, and we're going to get it cracking with boxing after that. But, yeah, cool. I thought it'd be an interesting show, man. Yeah.
That's what's up, man. Because what I'm going to do, I'm going to my computer on blast, you know what I'm saying, so I can hear it. You know what I'm saying? So y'all already know what time it is.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, oh, yeah. So it's all good in the hood. And
yeah, I look forward to it. But yeah, man, if you get a chance, I think we lost tone on the airway. But yeah, should be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. You'll be calling in any minute. But yeah, I have, of course, that's Tone out in Las Vegas. He does a lot of things out in Vegas and boxing. And of course, he is works at Caesar's Palace as well. And he has a lot of things going on out there. But yeah, sorry, lost the connection, Tom. But yeah, I was in the middle of saying, yeah, just keep logged in, man. And hopefully, when she calls in, you know, you can chime in, or you know, if you like.
Oh, so man. You know, what I'm saying, that's what it is. And you know, what I'm saying, I'm looking for an interesting topic, man. You be having some dope shows, man. You know what I'm saying? It's like you wanted the show I actually listen to. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Make sure y'all support Cheese, man. My man got his thing popping with the show. The very, very interesting stuff, you know. So a lot of stuff I'm learning as well. So,
I appreciate it, man.
So, man, you know, in order to grow, man, you got to learn something. You know what I'm saying? So,
That's right. And that's a lot of, I was saying that, you know, we try to mix it up a little bit because, of course, I got a lot of people who, you know, like boxing but not really into boxing all the time like we are. So I wanted to switch it up this week and allow people who, you know, are interested in different world topics to chime in on, you know, certain things that's going on in different perspectives. So. But, yeah, hold on, Tony. Okay. Hey, Emily, is that you?
Yep, it sure is.
Hey, Emily, is Emily Pazalakis out in Arizona, right?
Yep, I'm in Arizona. I'm in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, and I was just telling people about you. I really appreciate you coming through. And I started out by saying that I've, of course, been following you on Twitter for quite some time. And you had one of the best sense of humors I've, you know, on Twitter. And I really enjoy your little, tweets, you know, when you come through. But
I was wondering when I'm
going to
get fired for my tweets.
Well, yeah, just for the callers out there, tell them what you do and, you know, what your everyday life consists of.
My everyday life consists of, apparently, because the reason I'm calling in a couple minutes late is because my neighbor got his drone stuck in my tree. And
oh, no.
While I was out at a meeting, some kids from the neighborhood had a ladder in my yard trying to get this thing down from, like, 30 feet up. So the cops came. So that's what I was doing just now. That's, like, my everyday normal life, like, things like that are always happening. But actually what I do is I work in boxing. I'm a boxing publicist and operations. So I help promoters get the word out with media, local and nationwide, about their shows. And fighters, the same thing, and managers. And I do logistics for shows. So right now I'm working on a top rank event down in Tucson next week. And we've got a media day this week. So I'm organizing that and making sure people get medicals and making sure we have an ambulance and all those little details that have to happen. And generally just, you know, primarily that's mostly what I do. Just, you know, I love my job. I love boxing. And I'm really lucky to be able to do this. And then I also started a blog recently, so excited about that.
Yeah, and it's very fascinating. And I'll get to the boxing in a few, but first of all, I wanted to talk to you because I happened to catch your article about the gentleman, Janny Deng, and seeing the Syrian crisis through his eyes. And how'd you happen to come across meeting Janny?
I've lived in Phoenix my whole life, and so when the Sudan war was taking place and when all of the Sudanese refugees came to Phoenix, I lived in an area where one of their primary, like, service areas were held, actually, on 19th and Northern. in Phoenix, and that's kind of near where I live. So I kind of saw the influx of refugees and immigrants and kind of took note of that. I met some of them, you know, just through course of life or whatever. And then when this whole Syrian refugee crisis came up, I mean, people say really the dumbest things on social media. Like, there are these huge sweeping statements about, we don't want this or we do want this. We need to let everybody in or we need to let nobody in. And really none of those things are correct.
Right.
And I would see this stuff and I always think, like, let me never be the guy that goes on social media and says and makes an opinion like that about a topic as complex as that, you know, and look like a total fool. And that's really
Absolutely.
What, I mean, I hope. And if you follow me on Facebook or Twitter, and I'm not talking about you guys, no, I'm just
right.
talking about other people, you know, so
exactly.
I kind of started thinking, like, I'd like to write about, for my blog, like, I still don't have a really clear direction for my blog, like, sometimes it's stupid things, like, I'm working on one now about how not to cook a freaking turkey, because I had such a bad turkey experience over Thanksgiving, and,
right.
but I also want to, like, put in, you know, I want to talk about serious things, so I wrote about a local beloved business closing a little while ago and kind of their story and all of that. So I love to write and I love to learn new things and meet new people. So I was like, how can I talk about this refugee crisis without, you know, making a fool of myself? So I thought, let me talk to one of the Lost Boys. They're called the Lost Boys. So I looked them up. The Lost Boys as it used to be, you know, the old Lost Boys Center doesn't exist anymore because it really fulfilled its purpose when Sudan and South Sudan split up and South Sudan became a country. But what they did was they kind of restructured the organization to train people and help them go back to South Sudan, refugees and other people that want to help go back to South Sudan and help them rebuild because it's still screwed up. It's just not, it's just a little bit different than it was before. So they kind of fulfilled their mission of helping the refugees resettle. And now, you know, so I called them and I said, hey, I'm nobody. I'm not Channel 12. I'm not, you know, anybody. Can I come and interview you for my blog? And
right.
the head of the place called me back and he says, who are you? What is your blog? I said, you know, I have like 5 readers, so nobody's going
right.
to read it. Don't worry. Right. It's really just for me. So he's like, come on over. That's better. We don't want to get involved in any controversy. So they were really careful to say they didn't want to get out there and talk about the refugee crisis. And they said they'd gotten a lot of calls, but they turned down most of the interviews. So I went, and I did a lot of research before I went. I learned a lot about some of what the refugees experienced coming to the States and stuff. And it was really a pleasure and an honor to sit down with Danny because not only was he one of the Lost Boys refugees and actually, like, walked from Sudan to Ethiopia and,
wow.
and I mean like literally walked like 1,000 miles over a few months
right.
naked by the way naked I mean I complain
wow.
when I have to like park not in a really optimal place when I go to
exactly
water.
that's right
and or my phone is like kind of slow or you know my computer isn't responding the way I want it to, so those are like my major problems right now. But imagine these children, because that's what they were, walking across the desert, walking across Africa. It was just really, like, jarring, you know, and it was just to think about it. He's my age. We're, like, a year apart.
Mm-hmm.
So he came to Arizona, and he am I talking too much? Did you have more questions? I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. No, it was
okay.
Wonderful. Go ahead. I'm, yeah.
So he came to Arizona, and he settled in a high school. And what
mm-hmm.
was really sort of, what people don't understand when they look at the series, we don't want to let these people in. Look what they're going to do. Guess what? Nobody
right.
that's applying now is coming near the United States anytime in the next 2 years, probably.
Right.
It takes that
that's
long
right.
to go through the process. And
vetting,
he said he
right.
probably had 30 hours of interviews from the FBI, the CIA, NSA, all these different organizations to check his story and recheck his story and everything else. He said there were people that applied at the same time as him, like, I don't remember what year now, because it's been a few weeks, but 1995, and they're just now getting here 2 years ago. So
right.
I think that's a misconception. People think refugees are like, hey, I'm coming, and we're like, come on in, and then they just join us. And it's really not like that.
Yeah,
in
and
fact,
you know what?
Go ahead.
No, I was saying, you make a great point that a lot of people, and you said it, very clearly that people will be on Facebook and Twitter and they make the broad sweeping statement but they really don't know what it takes to go through the whole vetting process to have the refugees even come. And from your article, you said about 4,000 Sudanese refugees came to Arizona alone. And speak on the part about Jani and his, I guess, his transformation from coming from the Sudan to America and the things that he had to go through.
Well, you know, I asked him, one thing I asked him, I didn't really put a lot of this in the blog, because, I mean, I talked to him for, like, almost 2 hours, and I didn't want to make it unbearable to read.
Right.
But, you know, I said, how do they pick? They got a refugee camp, and they've got 2,000 people in the camp. How do they say, Jani, you're the guy. You're the guy we're going to go. He said, honestly, it's the application's about 2 inches thick. You got to fill it out.
Wow.
It's in English. You got to get an interpreter. You got to do other things. So there's just so few people that actually go through that process, and then they just pick them. And he didn't really know how they got picked. So then, you know, he goes through these years of interviews and vetting and all of that. One thing that will make all of the anti-immigrant or anti-refugee people uncomfortable is that they just assigned them a birthday, because they lost all of their records in this, like, trek across Africa. They lost all of their records. So they just assigned them a birthday, assigned them a name, you know, they come over. So he and his brother came over together, his older brother. And
right.
I think I talked about it in the article, that his brother had a really hard time adjusting, because in the Sudanese culture, they do everything together. If somebody's sick, everybody gets together and says, how can we fix this guy? And once you came here to the States, you had 90 days, I think he said, to resettle. They give you an apartment, no furniture, no nothing in the apartment, and they help you find a job. Well, then after that, you're on your own. And that's kind of what the Lost Boys Center really was built for, was to kind of help that post-90-day period and help people settle. Well, the brother, you know, really felt isolated, and he went into Catholic Charities, which is one of the major resettling organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
Apparently he shot at police and ended up getting killed. And I remember when he told me this, I thought, oh my gosh, I remember this happening. It was like my senior year in high school here in Phoenix. So it was pretty, and one thing he said also that's pretty, you know, interesting is that, you know, we heard of the Lost Boys. They got assigned this moniker, this marketing name, you know, from some guy wandering through the refugee camp, a documentary crew that said, we're going to call these guys
right.
the Lost Boys. They have no home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, because of that, they get all this recognition, and they kind of represent, in a way, refugees, even though at this time when all these refugees were coming, they were refugees from all these other countries. It's kind of interesting. Honestly, like, he had a hard time resettling. He was in a high school environment, and then he ended up helping other refugees resettle, getting involved with the Lost Boys organization, and, you know, now, of course, he's, like, a program director there, and he's a really... just a fascinating guy. So he's actually in Sudan right now for the first time in 30 years. I think he left yesterday to go back and try to, like, communicate with his relatives and see how he can make, you know, how he can help that nation rebuild.
Right. And what's interesting when you brought up the topic, you know, a lot of these gentlemen, whether they come, and it's the big topic today with the whole Syrian refugee crisis, and you have a lot of them, I guess, you know, they're fleeing persecution, as you stated in your blog, religion, group membership, political views, mass execution. And you get to a point where you get all these people who just want to flee and get out of there. And it's a very difficult situation when you try to have the broad statement of, or have a situation, well, we can't let anybody in, or we have to let everybody in, because you just really don't know. Emily, at this point, you know, it's a touch and go subject at this point. Yeah, that's right. And I don't know. Yeah.
But here's something that a lot of people don't know, and I didn't know until I talked to Jani. The process, the vetting process to come in as a student or a work, you know, visa is, like, not nearly as stringent as it is to come in as a refugee.
Wow.
I mean, think about that. How many people we have coming in that process is not near, and, you know, this is anecdotal. This is what he's telling me. So is it accurate? Is it, you know, does he have that experience? I don't know. But there are a lot of people coming in under different ways, and, you know, are they really getting the same scrutiny that these refugees are getting? And I don't doubt that there are people infiltrating refugee camps, but if I'm, you know, do I have the authority to speak on this? No, but I'm going to anyway. If I'm a guy that wants to come into the States and for nefarious reasons, do I want to infiltrate a refugee camp, which sounds like a pretty freaking miserable life, or do I want to try to come in as a student or some other way? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, and
so,
but
again,
you know
this
what?
Is me
you know
speaking
what?
On topics mm-hmm. I shouldn't speak on because I don't know enough.
No,
to
well, you know what? I appreciate your opinion, and everything you say makes sense, but... Yeah, like you say, you never know what the mindset of whoever it may be who's trying to come in to create harm, whether they have the patience to say, well, you know what, I'm going to go the refugee camp way, and I'll wait it out 2 or 3 or 4 years just to plot that whatever mass situation that he's trying to create, where, you, like mm-hmm. you say, some of them, are they willing to be that patient, which, you know, his history has... shown us in the last 15, 20 years, a lot of them are very patient. So we just
don't
know.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that being said, people in a refugee camp are very vulnerable. And I think you'll see
that
quote at the end of that senator had the quote that he gave about them being just really the most vulnerable people. And when you're vulnerable, you're probably more susceptible to things like, you know, suggestion, like, hey, you know, you'd have a better life if you would do these things. And, you know, who knows? I mean, we really don't. And that's kind of the point I was making at the beginning of my blog, when maybe I said it in a little more direct way that I shouldn't. Sometimes I think, like, my message gets lost because I'm swearing or whatever, but I really got tired of seeing people weigh in that really knew as much as me or less or more or whatever, just not enough to weigh in on it. And Jannie had a perspective. And we sat there, we had a good laugh about it. I mean, it's not a funny topic, but we're like, it's really funny how... people feel that they can come and say, no refugees. And even the people, like the governors that said, we're going to stop allowing that, you can't do that. It's a federal thing. Governors can't stop them. Now, can they make it more difficult once they get here? And can they stop programs? And those kinds of, yeah, they could do that. But it's really kind of a PR move, and it was kind of crappy. And it really, I feel, was inflammatory to people's, you know, beliefs and to people that were kind of on the fence or were, oh, well, the governor says we should stop it, so let's, you know, down with refugees. When, again, the people that are trying to be refugees now are not even, you know, they're, people applying for refugee status now aren't going to be here for a very long time.
Right. Well,
and
now,
after 9/11, I don't know if I said this in the article, after 9/11, the vetting process got even more difficult, of course, and it was actually stopped, even the Lost Boys. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's great. Now, you being out in Arizona, and of course you said you brought up Governor Ducey, what is the overall or opinion on him at this point for what he is saying about not letting them in? Is he getting a favorable nod out there, or what are the people out there thinking?
Arizona is such a weird place. And Danny told me, he's like, this is the most racist place I've ever been in the United States. Because...
Wow.
You see, we have a large number of Mexican immigrants. So the world that I live in, and I'm in boxing, and honestly, like, usually I'm the only one of two or three white people in the room. I see is not a favorable view on people like Ducey or people like Sheriff Joe Arpaio or some of these other people. But on the whole, I think Arizona is a red state. We, as a state, we tend to vote to the right. We do, I mean, we elected Ducey. We have a wonderful mayor in the city of Phoenix who is very much an advocate for, you know, refugee resettlement programs, and he's wonderful. But in general, the state leans to the right, and those are the people that vote. And that's what's kind of frustrating as someone, I'm here in the state, and I have all these friends that are Latinos, and they're passionate, and they should be represented more in the Senate and the legislature, and they're not, because I don't know if it's they're just not voting or what. And again, you know, now we're talking about things I don't really understand. I had at one time had this whole idea to do a website where you could get, you know, rides to the polls. Is that the problem?
Right.
You could use, like, some kind of social networking to get a ride to the polls and meet people that way. But
absolutely.
I don't know what's preventing the – because I don't think – that the voters represent the community. So something's wrong. And I don't know what it is or how to fix it, nor do I, you know, have the expertise or time, really. But that's, to be honest, I think as a whole, probably people You know, the best place to look at this is when one of the local news channels posts on Facebook their article about Ducey doing this, and then to read the comments. Your IQ will go down, like, minimum 5 points.
Right.
But it's really
right.
interesting to see, like, how passionate people are on both sides of this issue. And it really makes me, you know, question, like, my opinion and my feelings, because I'm like, well, they have a good point there. You know, you just try to keep an open mind. But, yeah, I think as a whole, the state is probably supportive. They're pretty, we're always the state that's in the news for doing stupid things, like 1099 and some of these other, you know, initiatives. So I have to assume they love it. I don't know.
No, but you know what? And I think, and I told people about your article, and I'm going to say it now. If anybody wants to check out her article, go to emilyboxing.com. And whether you're an expert or not, I think the point that you're making and the point that you are making on the air right now is provoke thought and not have such a narrow mind when it comes to any subject. And if you're not familiar with it, keep an open mind until you can figure out, decipher what's going on. So I really think this article is fantastic. So don't put yourself down.
I mean,
I think that's the whole thing, where if you get people to dialogue about certain situations and subjects, that's how we can create a solution. So absolutely. And the article grabbed me, and that's one of the main reasons I wanted you on. What is, at this point, how is Janny as far as the community itself? Are they, like, good with the whole Sudanese culture in Phoenix or in Arizona as a whole?
Like I said, there are a lot of resettled refugees. I think they tend to live in some of the same areas. For example, the area I live in, I feel like, has quite a few. And, you know, they get them jobs. And here's one of the challenges they organizations that were resettling, and they basically have to go to a company like Fry's, and I say Fry's because a lot of the Sudanese refugees worked at Fry's, the grocery store here, and said, well, you know, I got this group, and you're just going to have to place them and use them, and they don't speak English. And that was kind of one of the things they talked about, is that they had to kind of go to organizations and place a group of guys. And not only that, they look different than anybody we've seen here in Arizona. They're black, they're very dark skinned.
Right.
And physically, they look different. Janny said people would stare at us and not know how to deal with it. So it's definitely like, it was definitely a reset, you know, a period. But I think now I would think that the community is pretty strong. I mean, they've been here 20 years ago, so.
Wow. So that's pretty, well, I think it's a totally different dimension, a totally different look into what's going on as far as what's going on in Syria and all over the world. And I really wanted to talk to you, and I appreciate you talking to me about that subject, because we don't get a first-hand experience a lot of times on a person who has lived through it. And I think with you talking to Janny, it really brings a different perspective on the whole thing, as far as, okay, their mindset coming to a different country and they're getting used to the different culture. And it's not like they probably wanted to come. It's just a lot of them, 99% of them, well, just like us, if we were in that situation, we try to get our family out, I guess. So.
Yeah, no, it was a hard life. These guys came over as children, and a lot of them had post-traumatic stress syndrome from dealing with being child soldiers, or even just the, you know, seeing their friends die and dealing with the trip, you know, walking across thousand miles. And, you know, I hope with my blog, you know, I want to still have the you know, light posts and stuff, but I hope to kind of learn some people's stories and tell some stories, because I think, you know, it's really valuable. And maybe I don't have a huge readership, but if I can get his story out to a few people so they understand a little bit better what we're dealing with, that it's not just some faceless person that you just say, oh, they're fine in a refugee camp. You actually meet Janny, and you're like, I'm so glad this guy got here, because he's so amazing, and he's doing so much for the other, you know, refugees that were resettled here.
Again, that's wonderful. And again, if you haven't checked the article out, go to emilyboxing.com. If you get a chance, if you go on Twitter, please follow her at Emily Boxing. She has a great sense of humor, and one of the best parts of your article when I read it is the beginning when you said you had to hit yourself in the mouth because of your tooth, which I thought was hilarious.
It's so much pain going there, and I'm like, oh, my tooth hurts. And then I'm like, well, I am going to see this guy that walked across the desert. So I had already read about him, you know, before I got there. And I was like, I guess I should chill out and complaining about my tooth. So, and I asked him, I said, you know, is it hard to keep things in perspective? He said, even I complain about my phone breaking and all of that. He said, you know, you forget, like, how hard, you know, things were. He said, everybody does that. So, yeah, and he was a funny guy. He was really wonderful. Like, I was happy to become a friend of his and hope to, you know, spend time with him in the future because he was wonderful.
Yeah, that's great. And again, go on emilyboxing.com and check the article out. Hey, you got a few minutes to talk a little boxing while you're on?
I sure do.
All right, I'm going to get to it right away as far as the Klitschko Fury fight this past Saturday night. What did you think of that?
I enjoyed that. You know, I kind of like Fury's antics. I think he's kind of a funny guy. I thought it was, I told a lot of my non-boxing friends about him in that press conference with Klitschko when he showed up as Batman and the Joker came in and, you know, I'll make jokes about it and stuff. But honestly, it's really different to watch a fight when you don't have any stake in it. You know, I don't know any of these people. I don't have a feeling one way or another. So I really enjoyed it from that perspective. Seeing, you know, the Klitschko brothers, they were amazing champions. I mean, you can't take anything away from them. And to see Fury come in and, you know, just give everything he got. And he did the job, and it was fun. I enjoyed watching it. I enjoyed his post-fight interview. You know, he gave a lot of glory to God. That was, you know, what he really felt, and I liked that. You know, he gave the respect to Klitschko. You know, he said, you know, it's all theatrics. We're just trying to sell the fight. And then, of course, his singing to his wife or whatever was super cute. And of course, got him a lot of, on Twitter, it was like 80% loved it, 20% were like, I'm never following this guy again. But I think he did
right.
Watch him. So.
And you know what? I see where they have, well, Klitschko, if he chooses, does have a mandatory rematch clause. So I guess
I did
we'll
hear
see.
That.
Yeah, and but I really, Emily, I thought the fight was, I don't know, it seemed like Klitschko, his body and his mind was saying, I can do more, but his body doesn't seem like it will let him anymore.
Well, your body stops responding, and we know that. I mean, I don't know how old you are. I'm 36. My body doesn't do what it did when I was 25. And he was a great champion, and I think, you know, it was sad. I saw the tweet. First of all, when Tyson Fury cried when he was done, I bawled. I love when fighters show that kind of emotion because I'm just like, you know how hard and how many – I mean, I work with fighters every single day, and I know they're waiting for a fight, and it gets canceled, and they're trying to make weight, and the guy doesn't come in, and I know how much they go through to get to that point, and to see him win and just the emotional impact it had on him was just really made me emotional, made me love boxing. It's really – I get kind of tired of boxing because of my work, but I was like, oh, I love this. I love this sport, you know. And Klitschko, you know, he put on Twitter something like, I can't believe I lost. I'm really suffering. And that kind of broke my heart. I hate to think about that because it is such a lonely sport. And you see how many people these guys have on their junk when they're doing well. And the second they're not, everybody's gone. And I've seen it happen. And it's sad. And it's, you know, it's the loneliest sport in the world, they call it. And I do believe you've got a team, you know, your manager and your trainer, but at the end of the day, when you don't win, you're the guy at home by yourself, you know, and it was, you know, just, I think that was a good fight for boxing. I hope that, you know, I hope he got a lot of attention for boxing as a sport. You know, boxing's so huge in the UK, and
right,
I wish, you know, mm-hmm. I hope a lot of people in the States saw that on the highlight reels or whatever. I don't really watch sports TV, so.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point because, a lot of people now, because a lot of people that seem to only know in the last 5 or 10 years Floyd Mayweather, they forgot it was a great history before him, and they don't realize the sacrifice and the work that these guys put in just for one fight. And they give everything they got, and they leave everything in the ring. And that's probably why I love the sport so much, because, like you said, it is a lonely sport. And like you said, once they lose or if they're losing, then their backers slowly diminish, and you know, so I had to give them a lot of credit for that.
And then, of course, with social media, it's like a million times worse. So, you know, you have stranger after. I mean, even me, like, if somebody knows PR for a fighter and they lose or they're not looking good, you better believe they're tweeting me, oh, look at so-and-so, looks like crap. And I'm like, hey, a-hole, why don't you tweet somebody else that, like, gives a shit what you're talking about? Excuse my language. But,
that's right.
Like, you know, like, why do you have to tweet me or the wife of the fighter or, you know, the fighter himself? Like, there's plenty of people on the internet who agree with you and want to hear from you, and I'm not one of them, you know? So
that's right.
I can't imagine what it's like to be an athlete and have people shitting on you all day on Twitter. I would go nuts. These guys are, you know, hand it to them.
Yeah, and that's a lot of guys, as you say, there's a lot of guys, and we both see it on Twitter all the time, where they have no filter, especially when these guys, of course, have families or whatever. So you kind of, yeah, it sucks. But one good thing, and I'll switch subjects or switch gears, you got a event coming up out in Tucson, which I'm really excited. I saw this young man fight in Las Vegas, Oscar Valdez. Well, give me your take on this young man.
Yeah, no, he's something special. He's got a great team behind him in Top Rank and Espinoza Boxing. I love those guys. Top Rank has really put everything they got behind him. He's passed every test they've given him. This guy he's fighting is a Filipino guy. He's a tough guy. He's a very charismatic, very nice guy, too. He's not, you know, I've talked to him multiple times. He's not like a stuck-up dude. You know, he's got a pet alligator named it's like Frank or something. I don't know. It's Steve the alligator. And he's just a little likable guy. Like, he's a great, you know, he's got a great PR guy in Ricardo Jimenez. He's got a good story there. He's from the Tucson area, Nogales. So for him, this is kind of his coming home to fight in front of his family and friends. And it's going to be great. I think it's going to be a great show with him and Benavidez. And, you know, and we've got Johnny Tiarina, who's trained by Michael Carvajal, the former Hall of Fame three-time champion.
I love Michael Carvajal. That's right.
So he's making his coaching debut. I mean, he's been coaching this kid. He was supposed to debut back in October. We couldn't get him an opponent because it's real hard at 112 pounds to find a guy. Now he's gonna make his debut on that card too. So it's actually a pretty good card. I'm looking forward to it. It's gonna be televised on Unimas as well, like on Solo Boxeo.
Right. Yeah, and you bring up a great point with Top Rank, because I've had the privilege of covering a few fights because of them this year, and they've been wonderful to me. And I give a shout out to Top Rank, but
great.
You bring and yeah, man, and what do you think? And since you brought up the 112 pound weight class, of course, the number one pound for pound fighter in the world right now, Chocolatito Gonzalez. What do you think of this young man?
No, he's amazing. He's great. And it's real. I got a kid that's 112 pounds that I like help Cameron Duncan. Cameron Duncan is one of the clients that I work with. And he's the manager of Alexis Azueta, who's from Phoenix here. I brought him to Cameron. He's a really hard hitting, talented kid. I'll tell you what, man, you probably see me on Twitter once a week saying, anybody got a 112 pound fighter, I can match up with this kid. Cause I basically book him for fights constantly and just hope I get an opponent. Cause there's about, I would say, 20 maybe total in the States. And at any one time, you got one that's, you know, not in the gym, one that has to work, one that, you know. And
that's
so, you know, for Gonzalez to have made it to this level and gotten through that, I mean, it's easier in Mexico. There's a lot more small guys there. And he's from Nicaragua, right? Like, I don't know
Nicaragua,
where most of his fights were in Nicaragua or here.
Right.
But he's, you know, he's such a talent. And I can't get tired of these small guys. There's so much action and, you know, they're just as fun to watch to me as the big guys. So,
and you in his last fight, of course, I was privileged enough to be there, and he fought Brian Valorio, who I think is a fantastic fighter, Emily, and he put on a great show as well. Gonzalez was just a little too much for him, but you're right; these 112 pound guys, 116, 122 pounders with Vasyl Lomachenko, and these guys are making a rise again in the boxing world.
Yeah, and I think we need that. You know, we need, you know, the all-action people and you know, HBO's gotten behind, Gonzalez gotten behind. So that's, you know, that's a good thing. And it's hard to get those guys on that size on television, and now this guy, here he is. Everybody knows who he is, and now it's just a matter of getting him to kind of appeal to, you know, your mainstream fans.
Yeah, and I had a guy on last week who, you know, he's from out your way, Norm Fraunheim. And
I love him.
Yeah, he is one of the great, and I'll tell you this quick story. In my first fight I cover, and I walked in, of course I'm a little nervous because I don't know anybody, and he was sitting alone by himself, and I went and sat down, and we had the greatest hour and a half conversation just talking boxing, and since then we've been friends. He's one of the greatest guys I've met in the boxing world so far, so shout out to him as well. Of course, he'll be at that Valdez fight as well.
Yeah, I'm sure he will be. He's wonderful, and I hope to see him Thursday. We have a media day here in Phoenix. He's a great, great guy. You can learn a ton from him, and, you know, I love talking to him. He's so matter-of-fact, you know, and he's been around the sport forever. I love what, you know, anytime he writes, I like to read his articles and stuff. So he's a great guy.
Yeah, well, look, I'm not going to take any more of your time. You've been wonderful. I appreciate you coming through, and I know people will get a kick out of this interview, and I really appreciate you coming on.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me. So tomorrow I'm going to put out a new blog post. I'm going to talk about Creed, which I went and saw yesterday. against my will, which I enjoyed very much. I don't want to do a regular review because everybody's done that, so I'm trying to think of a different angle. I'm probably going to talk a little about some of the stuff that I saw that wasn't, like, real, like, you know, without spoilers. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to tell people their spoilers, I guess. I don't know. And then I'll talk about how not to cook a turkey. I'm going to, because I really, really fucked up a turkey. Excuse my language, but there's no other way to
say
it.
No, don't explain.
Like,
this is internet radio. You can say whatever you want to say.
I obliterated that turkey. Like, my aunt walked in. I'm like, hey, I think I overcooked the turkey. She's like, yeah, you think so? And I'm already, like, half in tears anyway. So I'm like, great. So I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to talk a little about Andrew Mendez. He's a coach here in Phoenix. He's a wonderful man. I got to know him about a year and a half, 2 years ago. We did a fundraiser for him. He was diagnosed with cancer. Ray Beltran and him are really good friends, and I've worked with Ray for years. And we put together a fundraiser for him, and he was really, like, just wonderful, inspirational guy. And his cancer was in remission for a long time, and it's back. And so I'd like to, you know, kind of talk about talk about him a little bit and his family, and then how people can help. He's a local coach here, coaches for free out of his backyard. He's a wonderful man. And then, that's kind of what I have planned for that. And then I'm kind of looking for the next story, you know, to talk about, like I did with Danny, you know, somebody I can learn from and hopefully share that with people. So I sure appreciate you plugging the blog and reading and having me on. It's an honor, and I appreciate it very much.
No, it's an honor for me. And again, folks, it's emilyboxing.com, and she brings her knowledge on from all angles. And if you would like to fuck up a turkey as well, please log on and check it and read the story.
You too fuck up a turkey.
That's right. Well, I appreciate
you. I do put my recipes every time, every other blog or so, I put one of my recipes because I'm actually a really good cook, unless it's a turkey. So I'm probably going to put on there my prime rib recipe. I have a good prime rib recipe. You can make prime rib and just forget the fucking turkey. Like, seriously.
That's right. And whenever I meet you, I may bring you out a Maryland crab cake when I come out west next time.
I love that. That sounds good.
All right.
Thank you guys so much. I appreciate you very much.
All right. Take it easy, Emily.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that was Emily from emilyboxing.com. That was pretty cool. And I hope you guys enjoyed the interview and what she had to say about Janny Denny. And it was great, man. I thought it was really fascinating. And you see, she comes from all angles, and she has a lot of knowledge on a lot of different things. And she's a very modest lady. So if you get a chance, please read it. And I hope you guys enjoyed that. Wanted to bring a different perspective to the night. But anyway, yeah, we only got about 10 minutes left, so if anyone would like to call, please call in 718-305-6496 to offer your perspective on the interview or anything else going on in the world. We're not going to just talk boxing tonight. So, yeah, again, 718-305-6496. Of course, we were talking about this whole crisis in Syria and Paris and the whole thing is going on. I'm not one of those guys that I judge anyone. I'm just trying to open up the dialogue to allow people to express themselves with whatever opinion they have, whether I agree or disagree. So that's what it's all about. I don't want people to, you know, be closed-minded on certain issues. A lot of people may say, well, it's in Syria or it's in Paris or it doesn't affect me, and which I think that's one of the most ignorant statements you can ever make, because everything affects everybody. Because say if you had a loved one to go over in Paris or whatever and just on vacation, or you had a child was privileged enough to be in college where they have some education abroad, or they get caught up in something serious like that. So it does affect us. If you're not going to think about, you know, your kids being caught up in it, then I will think about your kids being caught up in it. So that's where I'm coming from with that. So, yeah, we try to mix in a little heavy with the light today. So get your brain running tonight on provoking some more thoughts. So, yeah, I think she was great. Great interview, great sense of humor. Of course, you see she does a lot in Arizona in boxing, and she's a mover and a shaker out there. So I appreciate her having on. So, yeah, it was great. But, yeah, we still got a little bit of time left. So if you anybody out there would like to call in or talk, of course, it's 718-305-6496. Next week on the show, I'm working on a few good guests as well. So hopefully next week's show will be pretty good. I got something special lined up for the end of the year, and hopefully things will pan out. And, of course, in the new year, I'm going to try to raise the bar on the radio show and the website. I'm going to try to, you know, keep growing. And one of the goals I have in the coming year is to cover a fight or two overseas, which is really high on my agenda for the coming year. So hopefully that will take place. I was privileged to cover about 8 fights this year, so I'm going to try to up it and to 12 for the coming year. So, of course, do more on-site interviews. That's another one of the goals that I have. And, of course, another goal that I'm having is to get, you know, women more involved in boxing and getting to know the sport. That's why I try to keep my blog posts not so long, because I want the people who are trying to get into boxing can kind of understand where I'm coming from and keep it light, keep it funny, but have you guys learn something through the each blog post. So, you know, you get, and I think Emily made a good statement when she said as well, when she's doing her article, she could have wrote it longer, but she didn't want to, you know, bore her readers, which it would have been impossible because it was a great read. But I totally understand where she was coming from when she said that. You try to keep it short, keep the interest up. But yeah, so it's pretty good, man. I was the interview was everything I expected and more, because she brought interesting insight on, you know, the world we're living in. So it goes to show you, when you have an opinion on something, or it's not, and if you're not a so-called expert, a lot of times common sense outweighs everything. So you may have these so-called politicians or analysts or experts who offer their opinion, and they forgot one essential ingredient, and that's common sense. And I think she has a lot of that, and she makes a lot of great points. So, yeah, man, this is great. So, anyway, coming here, of course, just press conference yesterday, Sergey Kovalev, who was in my top 10 pound for pound, going against John Pascal again in Montreal. And, of course, that's Pascal's backyard. He'll have the fans on his side, but I tell you, I'm looking forward to Kovalev going in there and going to work, because the talk in boxing is Kovalev, Andre Ward later on in the year, and that would be a fantastic fight. Of course, you got Manny Pacquiao, who is going to make his final fight in April, and I appreciate everything Manny has given to the sport, and look forward to him. So I don't know his opponent yet, but I guarantee it'll be a big-time opponent and for his last one, and I look forward to him and Freddie Roach cooking up something to for his last fight. Also, I brought up Errol Spence Jr. earlier, and this kid, I tell you, I wrote a blog post about him a couple months ago. Young guy from Texas, and this Saturday, of course, PBC on NBC put on a show, and I think this guy has all the skill to be a top 10 pound-for-pound fighter, and he's not a big trash talker, but after the end of his fights, he makes no bones that he wants to fight the best in the world, so I'm looking forward to him making a step up this year to, of course, he's calling out Keith Thurman. Keith Thurman, of course, is going against Sean Porter, but he wants the Thurmans, he wants the Porters, he wants all of them, so I commend him on that. Yeah, it'd be great. Of course, Gennady Golovkin and Canelo will try to get together. Hopefully that fight will take place and get through all the red tape. Hopefully Golden Boy and K2 Promotions will get that together. And should be a great fight. But yeah, I think it was a great show. So I had quite a bit of listeners. No one called in, but I appreciate you guys listening, and my listenership is going up each and every week, and I really appreciate it. So, yeah, it's looking great. This is only about my 9th or 10th show, but every week the listenership is going up. So it's growing slowly but surely, and I really appreciate it. And I thank everybody for listening in. But I'm going to head on out of here, but until the next time, this is Chillin' with Cheese, and I'm out.
Something epic, you know? Where we hustle out of a sense of hopelessness, sort of a desperation. Through that desperation, we come addicted, sort of like the fiends we accustomed to serving. Where we feel we have nothing to lose, so we offer you, well, we offer our lives.
Right, right.
What do you bring to the table? Well, I'm watching every nigga watching me closely. My shit is butter for the bread, they wanna toast me. I keep my head, both of them where they supposed to be. Hoes to get you sidetracked and clap from close feet. I don't sleep, I'm tired, I feel wired like codeine. These days a rubber gotta admire me from four fiends away. My pain, which shit was quick to see. From selling cane to brains of fried to a fricassee. Can't lie, at the time it never bothered me. At the bar, getting my dog on properly. My squad and me, lack of respect for authority. Laughing hard, happy to be escaping poverty. However brief, I know this game got valleys and peaks. Expectation for dip, for precipitation, we stack chips hardly. The youth I used to be, soon to see a million, no more. Big Willie, my game has grown, prefer you call me William. Illin for revenues, great for lemon like Channel 7 News, round 7 Jews, head dead in the mic. Forgetting all I ever knew, convenient amnesia. I suggest you call my lawyer, I know the procedure. Block my body, can't trap my mind easily. Explain why we adapt to crime. I'd rather die enormous than live dormant, that's how we on it. Live at the main event, I better trip them out, we on it. Presidential suites, my residential for the weekend. Confidentially speaking in code since I sent you beacon. To NXS rental, don't be fooled, my game is mental. We both out of town, dawg. What you trying to get into? Viva Las Vegas, see ya. Later at the crab tables, meet me by the one that starts a G up. This way no fraud, Willie's present, gambling they re up. And we can have a pleasant time sipping margaritas, G-G-G. Yeah.
Can I live? Can I live?
My mind is infested.
With six doors to circle like a Lexus. If driven wrong, it's sure to hurt you. New level like duplexes. And unity, my crew.